Straight Talk on WRHI is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop for another edition of our Straight Talk broadcast. Presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors online at AndersonGriggs.com. Our thanks as well to Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care, PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. And to HighSpeedWeb.net that streams our signal 24/7, 365. Well, the sheriff of York County is with us today, Kevin Tolson, and his able-bodied public information officer, Mr. Trent Ferris. Why are you smiling about that? I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, I like that.
Huh?
I'm gonna write that on my
able-bodied
resume, yeah.
Able-bodied. That was pretty good.
I appreciate that.
Huh?
We didn't swear you into oath, man, before this started. Good kudos to Trent.
Here we are. So, you know, the most burning question that I have for you today?
I can't imagine.
I understand that there may be some opposition to you in the upcoming election. That has not yet announced.
I heard that, too.
Uh-huh.
Did you hear the same person?
It ain't me.
Oh, I thought that's who it was.
No. So you are running unopposed?
Apparently so, yes.
I know that just upsets you tremendously.
Well, the obvious answer is it does. I've made the analogy the other day. I had three boulders on my shoulders at the time of filing and the filing deadline, and one was, you know, just the normal day-to-day running the office and sheriff's office business.
Right.
That's one boulder, and then the other boulder was, you know, staring down the face of a campaign season.
Right.
And then, of course, the third boulder is this coronavirus.
Right.
So now I have only two on my shoulders. Yeah. Now. It's more manageable.
So you finished 4 years, right?
I will finish the fourth year. I'm in the fourth year now.
Mm-hmm. So here you go. What have you learned about this job that you did not think you knew when you started?
You have to be able to manage your time and your priorities to survive, really, right now. Time management is critical, really. I watched Bruce run the show for 20 years, and I told people after I took office, and, of course, we had a couple of pretty significant things happened early on that were tough to deal with. But I told folks, you know, I watched Bruce for 20 years. I wasn't the co-pilot, but I was in the cockpit, you know.
Yeah.
And I watched him for 20 years. And you do not know what that pilot goes through until the safety of those passengers are in your hands and you have to fly that plane.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And we won't go through some of the things that you've had to deal with, but welcome to the job.
Yeah.
I mean, and anybody who thinks that being in public service or being the sheriff is an 8-hour, 40-hour week job, dream. It's a long day.
It's long days, absolutely.
A lot to it.
But worth it.
All right, so we eliminated one boulder, and I wanted to talk about the second boulder, which seems to be dominating the news today. And I'm interested from your perspective what this COVID-19, coronavirus, call it what you want, how that has changed or impacted what the sheriff's office does every day.
Well, you know, we have a mission to fulfill regardless of what the circumstances are and what's going on in the world and in our community. So we quickly had to, you know, make plans, quite frankly, that we've never really had to talk about when we saw what was going on throughout the world and in the country. We went into action, we as a team and the command staff, and started what if and if this, then this. And so very quickly we developed a plan to, the main thing is to keep our employees, from having to be as least amount of contact with the public as possible while still performing our job and fulfilling our mission. And also try to keep them away from each other in the office as much. And so when you walk into the Justice Center Monday or Sunday, it pretty much looks the same. And it's very deserted. We've got folks working from home. Many folks are working from home. Our detectives are asked to not come in the building unless absolutely necessary. And
I got to stop you now. This is, of course, the newly expanded, renovated, beautiful sheriff's office that nobody's like the new family
right
court building over
it's
here.
It's very ironic, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we've put those measures into place to try to limit the amount of exposure that basically we have with each other. And if you look very simply at what's going on across the country and in the world, density is what's killing. So the farther away you can get people from each other, the less contact you have with each other, we feel like the better we'll be off.
And according to all the national statistics, that's working. I mean, we're starting to see the beginning of a flattening of this so-called curve. We got a long way to go until we're out of this, but it is working. And it's interesting, even though you walk right in here to Substation 2, look how just around you how far people are spacing themselves from each other.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a new world.
People generally are listening, and I'm glad to share. Well, we can share some numbers after the break, I guess.
Well, go ahead. Share me some numbers.
So these are pretty new numbers, and they're encouraging, and I am not an epidemiologist. But to me, they're encouraging, and we're listening to the epidemiology of all this and what they're saying. We've only had 5 additional cases since yesterday. These are cases that are reported from DHEC. We have 125 total in York County. That puts us at number 8 in the state, which is we're 7th in population. So as long as we're under that 7, I mean, I'd love for us to be 46.
Right.
And area code-wise, the folks in Fort Mill, I think they've remained pretty flat over the last several days. They're at 15, and of course our 29730 and 29732 are looks like 50 of our 125 in total.
But you know, I always try to put these numbers in perspective. We're sitting in a county that is almost 300,000 people, 300,000 people, and we're talking about 125 cases.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's remarkable.
Well, you know, there's two lines of thought on that, and I've been either commended or condemned on either side. And you know, there is one line of thought that this is not 125 folks. And look what we're doing. We're shutting down commerce, and folks are losing their jobs.
Right.
And the county is, you know, doing the stay at home, stay safe push. And my take is, that is why we're at 125, and we don't need to get lulled into a false sense of security, and we need to hunker down for the next several weeks and get through this, what they call the curve, and flatten the curve out, and hopefully York County will be able to show communities of similar size or larger that if you do listen and you do the things that the leaders are urging you to do, it'll save lives.
You should have been in the studios yesterday afternoon. I had a very interesting debate with a person in the financial world who was looking at it from the other perspective. You know, you got to weigh the impact on humanity versus what is happening with the other side of the coin, which is our total ability to thrive as a democracy and to work. I mean, we've got everything shut down.
The economics.
And it's killing business all over the place. And you can argue, you know, what's the value of one life? We got that. What's the value of one business going down the tubes? I mean, it was a very interesting exchange. I told him, I said, if you got enough guts, I'll put you on Straight Talk and we'll have this conversation.
Well, you know, and there's still some unknown out there as to the effects that this is having on people, you know, mentally, as folks continue to endure financial issues and financial crises and the mentality and the mental aspect of being cooped up and folks who are normally, you know, used to getting up and being outside or at a job all day or just getting out of the house and being at their work. We've yet to see what the impact on, and I'm in a bubble here in a little bit, in law enforcement. We've yet to see what the impact on law enforcement is going to be.
You would have enjoyed a program I did a week or so ago with some representatives of NAMI, the National Association of Mental Illness. First thing they said, a boy hit me like a 2x4 in the head. Stop calling it social distancing. Call it physical distancing. Mm-hmm. We are social animals, and we have to stay connected however we can. You know, whether it be texting, whether it be FaceTiming, whether it be on the phone, whether it be in the parking lot at a distance, we have to keep connected socially. And if we keep isolating ourselves, we're exasperating the problem you're alluding to.
Correct. Yeah. Absolutely.
So Trent Ferris, you're over here. You have been as quiet as a church mouse.
I'm just listening.
Come
I'm
on,
enjoying
man.
This.
You got all this prep. I want to see what you got here,
well,
man.
This is just in my notes because I never know what you're going to ask.
Okay. All right.
But I like that word, physical distancing, because we're trying to use those words that are simple to folks who are out there in the public who need to, you know, and using different methods of getting this message across, because right. you're going to have people that say, this is not right, you shouldn't do this, and then you have people who are on the other side saying, no, this needs to be done. And we're trying to hit everybody from both ends of the spectrum to tell them to say, you know, just stay away from each other. Stay home if you can. Stay healthy. Stay safe. And we can all beat this if we all just do what we can do together.
Right.
And Trish started up at the county, and we started up our ESF 15 PIO group, which is emergency support function through the emergency management office. And we've teamed together to help push out that message and make it simple for everybody that if you stay home, we can beat it together.
You just touched on something I was going to ask about, and that is emergency manager. Now, they're always doing the big what-if schemes. You know, if this thing really gets bad, if the numbers were 10 times what they are here today, have you all gone through scenarios like that in terms of what you would have to do if this really got really big here in York County?
I don't think anybody's ever been or practiced or even thought of a scenario like this. Until it actually happened. So
we've talked about it. We've not, I mean, obviously we've not had the ability to group together as a huge team, Office of Emergency Management, EMS, the various Red Cross and services that are offered throughout the charitable industry and the right. Sheriff's Office. And, you know, it's interesting, we had a large-scale active shooter training that we try to do every 3 years, and this is year three, and we have to do it in the summer at a school, obviously, and with all the unknown of this, it was scheduled in June. We've had to postpone that, but we've spoken and talked about what ifs, but actually putting a plan into place, we haven't.
Have you seen any kind of increase in burglaries or what have you as a result of people not having a paycheck, yet having to put food on the table? None of this stimulus money has kicked in. I haven't heard of anybody getting a check yet. They keep saying it's in the mail, it's on its way, whatever. But I got to think that something like this, you're already expecting what we don't want to hear, which is we're going to have an increase in these areas.
Well, nobody wants an increase in anything, but I mean, if you want to get bare bones about it, we had a couple of car break-ins this morning. There was 10 in the Highway 274, Highway 49 corridor. A couple of days prior, we also had about 17 different car break-ins. People are starting to get antsy. But as far as large-scale people breaking into homes during the middle of the day or at night, not as much.
Sunday, I asked our intelligence unit and our analysts to give me a snapshot. Because we're really early into this as far as how it's going to affect crime. But so we took a snapshot of the previous 2 weeks from last Sunday, from that time period in 2019. And overall, our violent crimes had a decrease of 20%. Our property crimes had a decrease of 23%. That's short term. Of course, we had, that's a two-week violent crime snapshot. So we could have a surge in robberies. We had a double homicide day before yesterday. So that would affect that number. And interestingly, our calls for service have experienced only a decrease of 1.63%. So meaning we've taken great measures to try to limit our exposure to the public and our interaction with the public. So we're doing more than we ever have by trying to do it by phone. And so that decrease of 1.63%, I would think, would have been a little bit more than what we're seeing. So
what about your patrol units that are out there? Do you try to just become more visible driving around just so people know that you're there?
Well, we do. But again, with a really a small fraction, a 1.5% decrease in calls for service, we're not able to do as much as that as we want.
Yeah.
We had 51,000 calls for service over 600 square miles last year, and 180,000, 190,000 unincorporated population. So we stay pretty busy with calls for service.
Any impact as far as physically? Anybody in your sheriff's office has gotten sick as a result of this?
So we've had one deputy test positive. Just saw him. He's working. He feels great. He is almost 3 weeks from the time that he felt bad, and he tested. We don't know where he would have contracted it. We can only surmise, I guess. But so I've only had one employee test positive, and he's been the only one, and he's feeling great back at work. And we've had several, I think, nine quarantine over the past 3.5 weeks, and we have zero in quarantine today.
Are you testing everybody, or are you just waiting for somebody to say, I think I have some symptoms and I need to be tested?
No, there's actually a particular set of circumstances and requirements that they have to meet before we're able to test, and one of those is fever, obviously. And so, because there aren't unlimited tests out there, they're trying to everybody is trying to limit the, who we test. So we have to meet certain requirements before we're tested. There is priority testing for all first responders across the state that has been set up through the state.
So once the green light is given for us to start resuming some type of normal activity, do you see yourself rearranging your office in such a way that people a little bit further from each other are going out and buying one of these forehead thermometer things and testing everybody in and out? I mean, that's, if you go to any doctor's office now, that's the first thing they do is they put that little thing to their head, and in 2 seconds they know whether you got a fever.
So we've got those thermometers. We've got a limited number of those thermometers that we have distributed throughout our district offices for our employees, and we've got them up front at the Moss Justice Center where the folks are screening and are available to employees. I would imagine, I don't know what the future looks like physically for the office as far as distancing and those kinds of things, but I would imagine we will implement more measures than what we have. And I think next year's flu season, I think it will be significantly less.
Yeah, and I think we'll be making sure everybody gets a flu shot and a whatever virus shot.
And we have that brand new, nice, big building with more space to work in, so we're not all clumped up together. So, yeah,
okay.
I think we'll be good.
All right. We're going to go ahead and take our mid-program break. Remind you that you are listening to Straight Talk, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors online at AndersonGriggs.com. Our thanks as well to Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, of course, is still open for business. You can't dine in, but you can get these fresh subs and salads 7 days a week right before your eyes. There's a magical way we do it. It's on the cue card over here on the green T-shirt. We're all going to say it together at the count of three. One, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden.
That's the way it is. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI.
How's this for March Madness? As the world changes, so is our service to our friends at Substation 2. Effective immediately, whether you call in, fax, or order online at mysubstation2.com, we'll bring your order out to your car, or you can stay at home for home delivery. Isn't a great summer salad from Substation 2 just what you need at a time like this?
Gold Hill Emergency Department is now open. This is Michelle Walk, ED Director at Piedmont Medical Center. Gold Hill ED is Fort Mill's first standalone emergency room, open 24/7, 365, offering all the services of a hospital-based emergency room with 12 treatment areas. Whatever the medical issue, our team of emergency medical professionals is ready to treat your family, well, when it matters most. Stop by the ED at Gold Hill Road and pick up a free first aid kit. Visit goldhiller.com to learn more.
This is Danny Rogers with Paul Davis Restoration and Remodeling. If your home or business is damaged by water, fire, storm, or mold, Paul Davis is here to help. We are staffed with over 35 trained and certified professionals to handle any type of property damage. Our team mission is to provide extraordinary care while serving our neighbors in their time of need. Whether you need repairs in one room or rebuild a whole home, Paul Davis is here to help. Find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
Our lives have changed tremendously lately. Founders Federal Credit Union wants you to know we are here for you. While our world right now may be uncertain, your money at Founders is not. Founders Federal Credit Union is fully backed by the NCUA, and Founders members have many ways to access their money at Founders. Our drive-thrus remain open, many with extended hours. Our ATMs are fully serviced. Founders Online and the Founders app are available to you 24/7. Relax. We are your credit union, and we are here for you. Not a member of Founders? Visit relaxjoinfounders.com to apply for membership.
Good Pharmacy, with a modern look and traditional standards.
This is pharmacist Kia Hicklin. All six of our pharmacists love serving you and your children. Ask us about alternatives for your child's medicine.
My mommy loves Good Pharmacy.
Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue, Rock Hill.
How's this for March Madness? As the world changes, so is our service to our friends at Substation 2. Effective immediately, whether you call in, fax, or order online at mysubstation2.com, we'll bring your order out to your car, or you can stay at home for home delivery. Isn't a great summer salad from Substation 2 just what you need at a time like this?
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. We have York County Sheriff Kevin Tolson and his able-bodied public information officer. You like that able-body, don't you, Trent Ferris? You need to put that on your card. Put that on your card, able-body. So when this one officer was determined who had been tested positive, what did you do in the rest of the department? Because I'm sure that person had come in contact with a bunch of people.
So we, well, actually, fortunately, this deputy worked in a position where it did not require a lot of interaction with other deputies. There was some, and we notified those, and they discussed a meeting that they were in and what we determined to be close contact within what we thought was the incubation period. And so we had those deputies quarantined for a specific period of time where, by CDC regulations, they were free to come back to work, which they did, and we disinfected the office that they were in. And I'll have to say, you know, the boss don't always get it right, and I made a mistake, and the media got it before my staff got it, and I got some feedback on that. And,
can't imagine.
Well, yeah, it was wrong. But you know, when you're wrong, own up to it. And I assured folks, I sent something out shortly after the media got it. And I sent a notification to our folks, and then I have since sent another notification that, hey, I goofed up.
That won't happen again. Where your able-bodied PIO should have helped
and
you.
Here's where here's what we're going to do. And so every day an email goes out to staff as to how many people are quarantined and how many positive tests we have.
It's interesting that you're on here today because yesterday in the news, one of the hottest outbreaks of this COVID-19 is in the Cook County Jail in Chicago. 400 inmates have tested positive on this. So you operate a big jail facility up here. You've got several hundred people in there. What's the status in the jail?
Zero.
Wow.
Zero cases. Zero today and zero historically. We have had none. I will say that the courts have made a push to hear those cases in a more timely fashion. That's all Judge Hall right now is hearing is our cases that are folks that are incarcerated, and we've been able to lower the numbers so that we have the ability to quarantine a good number of people should we have a positive test. Now we've had some false alarms, I guess you'd say, or we have had to quarantine people. We've had to take them to the hospital, and we have had them tested, and they've all tested negative. So, knock on wood, we'll be fortunate to not be able to have a spread in the jails. That's not a good scenario.
Have you had to do any early releases of people just to get the population down so you have more room to spread out?
No, well, I don't know if you'd call them early releases. Again, when the court is focusing solely on the cases of folks who are in the jail, then obviously, you know, we had one courtroom. If things were all normal and there was no coronavirus, and we had one judge, one set of prosecutors, and, you know, one set of public defenders, and then the private bar to focus solely on those who were in jail, I think we would see a little bit of this decrease in the population. Now, you know, what a judge decides to do as a result of this epidemic and this coronavirus as far as sentencing goes or bonds, that's completely within the discretion of the court.
Right.
So,
but the court isn't stupid. I mean, they know what's going on, and they can figure it out. And it may be somebody who was guilty of something that is on the minor category, and they might say instead of putting him in the pokey for whatever, let's put him out on release or something.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Well, other than the COVID-19, what else is going on in your wheelhouse?
I couldn't tell you over the last 3.5-4 weeks.
That's all that's been going on.
What about the officers themselves, the men and women who are out there? I'm thinking about you pull somebody over for speeding or drunk driving, and you don't know, you already don't know what's in that car, whether somebody is a jerk in there and going to act like a jerk or they got a weapon. You already have that. Now they're worried about, well, does this idiot inside the car, is he just loaded with this COVID-19? So do you change your modus operandi at all?
Yeah, we've encouraged folks to – go ahead, Trent.
No, sir.
We've encouraged folks, our folks, to try to keep in mind physical distancing as much as possible to the extent that you still have to do your job. You know, I've been for 2 weeks now, over 2 weeks, I have been I won't say necessarily working with DHEC, but trying to work around DHEC. I don't know. We've been urging DHEC as a law enforcement and first responder community. We have been urging DHEC to release the address level information of positive tests. Other states have done it. We were given a various number of reasons as to why they would not do that. And it boiled down to they have the ability to, but they are choosing not to. For the protection of that public interest, they don't see that it's an imminent threat to the health and safety of the public. Now, with that said, with as long of a battle as it's been, we have been told that we are getting ready to go live with a system that allows us to query our dispatch centers to query an address that they maintain, the database that they maintain, and the system that they maintain. We can query the address on a call-by-call basis and receive a yes or a no. That's not necessarily ideal. It's not necessarily efficient. If you think about the 51,000 calls that just the sheriff's office has received, you think about 911. They get police, fire, EMS.
Yeah.
So hundreds of thousands of calls where every call, if we are going to a house, someone is physically going to have to enter their name. And get a yes or a no. Not efficient, but I'll take what we can get right now, and hopefully we can deal with this later and get a different outcome in the event that we have to do this again with DHEC.
And so, also, they want to make sure that if you do have to call 911, be as truthful to the dispatcher as possible, because if you call and you're scared that a deputy or firefighter or EMS doesn't show up because you think you have a fever, that's not helping out anybody. So if you do have to call, please be truthful and say that you have the symptoms.
We are not denying service based on how you tell us how you feel. We're still coming. It just allows us to use our limited personal protective equipment so that we can protect ourselves a little better.
I'm just surprised that the governor, with all of what he's been doing, hasn't told DHEC, you will release this information, and you'll do it every time somebody keys in some info, so you don't have to go through this additional steps to get what you want. It's just... The data's there. What's the deal? Gentlemen, thank you for all that you're doing. I appreciate you stopping in.
Thank you, man.
Have I missed anything?
No. Thank you to the men and women of the York County Sheriff's Office who are continuing every day to go out and do the job, and all of our first responders and law enforcement.
And all of our hospital workers, too, because, boy, they're right on the front line this time.
Yes, sir.
Stay safe, stay healthy, stay home.
And get your little spray bottle out. I'm going to need it again when I clean up this equipment. All right, and that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program. Live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors online at AndersonGriggs.com. Substation 2 is open for your fresh subs and salads today and tomorrow, but they will be closed on Easter Sunday. Yep, perfectly closed Easter Sunday. But during the interim, if you want something to eat, it's right here. You just can't dine in. So how do they do it here at Substation 2? The count of three is magical. 1, 2, 3.
Slice, slice, slice. Dark.
Have a wonderful Easter weekend, and we will see you on the radio Monday. Bye.